Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, we are into the offseason. How you doing? How are you feeling about the months ahead, the dark, wintry, cold months ahead?
For me in Boston, yeah, sure. Maybe not as much for you, though.
Oh, hey, it's been raining. It's been pouring.
Yeah. Okay, rainy, yeah, but not as cold. It's been cold here. It's been, you know, getting up, it's been like 30 degrees in the morning. So we're fully into that late fall, creeping into early winter territory in Boston. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was actually, it hasn't been a ton of moves, obviously, yet. It's November 20th. But this week was kind of fun with the qualifying offer stuff is going to happen tomorrow. And then, you know, on Wednesday, I think it was, with the deadlines for the Rule 5 draft, which led a lot of teams to be, you know, making moves kind of to open up roster spots.
Right.
So a lot of moving, you know, maybe not the biggest names, especially if you're only in like closer or save only leagues, not a really exciting day. But for, you know, there was some big, In my opinion, there were some names, some very interesting names that were either, you know, DFA'd or traded. We'll get to them shortly.
Yeah, I mean, there were some interesting signings. Probably not the podcast to talk about them, but we also got the awards. But it was cool to see. Yeah, like you mentioned, the qualifying offers accepted. Surprising to see Imanaga back with the Cubs after that whole saga.
Yeah, it sounded like the Cubs really didn't want him to resign or to accept that qualifying offer.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, I mean, why? I know they're trying to sneak a draft pick out of it, but
right.
Like if you're gonna, you know, throw it out there, if you're gonna extend that to him, I mean, you should be ready for him to accept it.
I read something that I think they had declined all the options on him because staying in that contract structure meant that they would have to pay a portion of it to the Japanese team that he played with.
Oh, could be. Yeah. I haven't read into that, but that might be, yeah, there could be some clause in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit with Brandon Woodruff as well. I thought those guys could probably get something more interesting in free agency, at least long term, you know, more money over the next couple of years. So I mean, it's you know, fun that they're both betting on themselves, but yeah, it does thin out that starting pitcher market a little bit with those two guys you know, accepting their qualifying offers. And I think Edwin Diaz was the only reliever and he didn't accept his. So yeah, we got all these relievers still ready to go in free agency, and only one signed so far.
Yeah. Speaking of the starting pitching market, that Grayrod trade was weird. Grayson Rodriguez traded by the Orioles to the Angels in exchange for outfielder Taylor Ward. Ward is solid. I always feel like he's been underrated. He's a high on base percentage guy, so you don't really talk about him much in standard fantasy leagues, but he did hit over 30 home runs this past season, but he's pretty limited defensively and he's a free agent after 2026. And this is an exchange for one of baseball's top prospects. I'm pretty sure Grayson Rodriguez was the top pitching prospect in baseball at one time.
Yeah.
Like, and he's not a free agent until I think 2029. So I think the Angels got a good one with this one, but they don't really have a good track record of keeping pitchers healthy. So for a guy like Grayrod, who struggled in that area, it's a very interesting trade, and one that I wouldn't have expected the Orioles to go through with.
Yeah, there's some perfect world out there where both Grayrod stays healthy and Reed Detmers returns to the rotation and is just as effective there as he was as a starter or as a reliever. Mm-hmm. And then they have like that 1-2 for the next, you know, few years to at least give, you know, give the last years of Mike Trout being, you know, a good baseball player some hope there in LA. Right. And it sounds like they're in on other guys too. But there's, yeah, obviously the Orioles only make a deal like that if there's some serious concern with Grayrod's health. And he didn't pitch at all last year. There was some really, you know, I don't, the injuries, they just kept piling up. They're all different things too. It's it's really tough to say what to expect from him next year or even moving forward. But for the Angels, it's definitely worth the gamble, in my opinion. For
right,
they don't really have that type of top end starting pitcher. You know, even in their minor league system, there's no real potential ace there. So at least this gives them, you know, something to dream on. And for Ward, who's only, you know, is a free, they probably trade Ward at the deadline if they're out of it, you know. So mm-hmm. It gives them some sort of upside. So it's an interesting trade. I think, yeah, the Orioles, I don't know, they have, you know, a bunch of outfielders already. So we'll see. I'm guessing they're gonna move an outfielder for a pitcher, which, like, is that gonna it's, yeah, I don't know, something has to give there still,
right? And lastly, I thought that the Mauricio Dubon trade was weird. The Astros traded Gold Glove utility fielder Mauricio Dubon to the Braves in exchange for Nick Allen, who himself is a very good defender, but man, does that guy not have a bat. He cannot do much. I think this past season he had a 53 WRC plus, and yeah, not a great hitter, but an incredible fielder at shortstop. So I see how Allen can be useful, but to trade somebody like Dubon, who is equally good at defense, or at least comparably so, and can play all over the field and mm-hmm. hasn't been as bad with the bat. He's not been great, but I mean, he's been a two-war player this past season. I guess he will be a free agent after this season, so maybe that's part of it, but that seemed a little bit interesting.
Yeah, I think it sounds like the Astros are just trying to shed some salary because they're trying to stay under a certain number. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why it doesn't really make sense on paper, but if you're trying to save, what did they think they saved, like $5 million or something on this, and I guess it makes sense for them. But yeah, Dubon's clearly the better player of the two. Right. I still don't love him as like the starting shortstop in Atlanta. No. As that super utility guy, the role he kind of had in Houston, that would make, you know, that works out well. But I guess they could do work. He's better than Allen. He's an upgraded shortstop over him for sure. Even mm-hmm. if the defense takes a hit from Allen, I think the offense makes up for it.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
Very, very interesting start to the offseason. And there's plenty of stuff that we didn't even touch on in the reliever market. And that's what we're going to spend the majority of our podcast talking about today. We'll catch up on the news from the past couple of weeks since we returned from First Pitch Arizona. We recorded from Arizona live on our last podcast, so go listen to that one. But yeah, we'll cover the news, some injury news, and then get into the transactions that have already occurred. As Rick hinted at, there were some DFAs, some players designated for assignment removed from their team's 40-man roster. So we'll check in on the notable relievers there. A few relievers signed with teams. It was all guys re-signing, so not a lot of movement or change there, but some interesting names there. And we had a handful of trades. We'll cover the relief pitcher awards that came out last week. And then our main topic will be discussing the free agents in the bullpen era for 2026. So we'll draft some of our favorite relievers that are available on the open market, and we'll discuss the rest of them as well. But there's plenty to talk about, if you couldn't tell by the overview that I just did, very lengthy. Let's jump right into it and start with probably the most interesting thing that's happened since the end of the World Series, and that's the conclusion or the resolution of the Emmanuel Clase case. He and Luis Ortiz were suspended in the middle of last season under concerns that they were betting on games or had been working with other people to throw games in a certain way. And we got the resolution, and they were. And I somehow called it a little bit. I mean, I think everybody was under that impression, but there was a funny clip that Pitcherless posted after I did a interview with Nick and said, yeah, Emmanuel Clase is never pitching again. And it does not seem like he will be. And he faces a lot of time in prison, up to 65 years in prison if he gets all counts, if he's guilty on all counts and gets the maximum sentences. But pretty crazy stuff going on there. What's your take on this Emmanuel Clase news? And I mean, I think we sort of know how this shakes out for the Guardians bullpen.
Yeah, I know. When we were putting the rundown together today, I realized like late that like we still haven't, that happened right after we last recorded. So It's like, oh, we got to talk about this again. Because it's, I mean, it's been a lot of people talking about it. It's just, it's dumb. It's frustrating. It's just, it's unimaginable how stupid this whole plot was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, like you said, Class A is, barring some other, you know, something coming to light that, you know, helps his case, there's no way he's ever pitching again. Just dumb beyond belief. I don't think there's anything else really. Everyone's been talking about it already. It's kind of, you know, we've heard all the takes. I do think, you know, that's obviously, I don't, you know, there was only, I think there was 40 or so NFBC drafts before this. I don't think Cade Smith, I don't think his value goes, I mean, maybe it goes up a little bit. Maybe there were some people who thought Class A would actually pitch next year. But yeah, I think, you know, this cement, and I've seen Cade Smith's name and trade rumors and stuff too. I'm like, it's the one thing the Guardians really have going is that bullpen is pretty shut down at the back end of the back end. I think Cade Smith needs to stay there, especially now. And he should be their closer for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Super, super weird stuff going on there. I mean, I don't know why they would risk all of this, risk their whole livelihood for a few thousand dollars. But hey, that's what happened. So, yeah, I don't think we need to wax poetic or really talk at length about this. I think everybody knows about it. I think everybody knows the details, and we've heard everybody's opinions on it. But yeah, I mean, as bullpen guys, we're sort of obligated to talk about that. But yeah, it's crazy that it was the best closer in baseball.
Yeah. Though.
Like, I mean, I get it if you're like a fringe guy, but to be
Ortiz, sure. Yeah. Okay, Ortiz,
but even he was like breaking out a little bit this past year.
He's good. He was talented. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it all really sucks. It's all really weird, but
Class A had two $10 million options coming his way that were going to get picked up. It's just like, I don't know. Did he not realize how good I don't know. I could go on and on about it, how dumb it is, but it's just frustrating, really. Stupid.
Right. Definitely. Well, they're going to pay the ultimate price for that. And that really sucks, but because Class A was really a great talent, and he was fun to watch while he pitched.
Loved talking about. Yeah. I mean, because he was so different from the rest of the closer. We're talking like he's dead or something, but like, he's like, you know, he's such a different, unique talent from the rest of the closers. Like the closest thing I think that this generation seen to someone like a Mariano Rivera in a way where it's like not all about strikeouts, just like, you know, getting, just does his job, limits hard contact, just super steady. And yeah, it's really, you know, tough to not see him pitch again.
Yeah. Well, Guardians bullpen was set up to be electric, and it'll still be really good because Cade Smith is a great replacement, and they got enough guys there. So they will miss him, but it's not going to be too devastating to that franchise. So RIP Emmanuel Class A. He's still alive, but he's not going to play baseball anymore. All right. Let's stick in the AL Central, move through the rest of our news, and talk about the White Sox, where we know Jordan Leisure is going to be probably at the top of that bullpen ladder, but it seems like he's going to have some competition from a fellow young right-hander in Grant Taylor, as he is expected to stay in a relief role. He pitched out of the bullpen this past season, and as he came up as a starter in the minors, we expected him to sort of go the route of like a Spencer Strider, where they come up as a reliever and then ultimately move into the rotation and take off from there. But it looks like the White Sox will keep him in a multi-inning relief role.
Yeah, or even sticking with the same team, Garrett Crochet. But I guess Crochet had 2 years in a relief role, or he was hurt for one of them. So he went a different way. But it does seem like there's at least he's going to be pitching and he's going to get stretched out a little bit. So there's going to be a multi-inning relief role for him, potentially getting starts later in the year. And I do. You know, I think, and that, you know, I think we're probably headed towards this bullpen in the closer situation here being, you know, I don't know if there's ever going to be a guy. Maybe like Leisure is still the one guy who I think has a chance to break away from the rest of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we see, you know, Leisure get a couple Taylor getting like a 3-inning save here and there. You know, one of the lefties mixing in, or Vassell, or whoever else is still in that bullpen. Could just be another headache, especially this team. I mean, they're going to be, I'm sure they're going to be a little bit improved. But it's still, I don't expect them to make a huge jump this year into like 80 plus win territory. So saves might still be hard to come by. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. Leisure still excites. This is exciting just because the stuff that they showed in the second half. Mm-hmm. And if the price is right, yeah, sure, worth the chance there. But not someone I'm getting super excited about with Taylor staying in a relief role.
Yeah. GM of the White Sox, Chris Getz, said of Taylor, it's important for him to pitch multiple innings, and that goes to many of our arms in the bullpen. It's more focused on the arsenal and ability to have deeper outings rather than him grabbing starts next year. So it sounds like a starting role is not out of the question, but right, they want to sort of ease Taylor into that, and maybe he's a starter when the White Sox are more competitive. Another pitcher who is in a similar situation where trying to figure out what their role is going to be next year is going the other way. Roky Sasaki will be a starter for the Dodgers next year. He opened last year as a starter for the Dodgers after coming over from Japan with a lot of hype, and he really struggled, was injured, got bashed around in the minor leagues, and then returned to being the Dodgers closer during their World Series run. So it looks like Sasaki back in the rotation, but hey, that doesn't really completely count him out of the bullpen. And I think he's somebody that's still well worth drafting a little later in drafts.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those tweeners. I think that you can, like if you have your last pick, throw a dart and see what happens. He has either a good spring as a starter and ends up getting the sixth starter spot in that rotation, or maybe he ends up back in a closer. I feel like his first pitch in Arizona, I feel like there's a lot of talk about Sasaki being the closer, and it's just,
yeah,
wasn't very good in the postseason, despite what, I don't know, what people might think. I feel like it's one of those, it was a little bit of a trick, because he did have like his first two or his first couple outings were really good. Then, you know, teams started to kind of adjust, and I think the Dodgers can and will want to do better than him as a closer anyway. So I think if he was in the bullpen, it was never going to be a closer role for him. Second of all, too, the Dodgers, this is someone they put, there's a lot of time and effort and, you know, money put into Sasaki being a starter there. I think that's where they want him to be. So I think they're going to do everything they can to keep him, you know, as a starter. So it does open up some things for, I mean, as of now, Tanner Scott's probably still the favorite for the closer role.
He's like a top five paid reliever in baseball. Maybe he's number two.
Scott?
Yeah.
Well, he might be. They might give someone else more money to be in front of him.
Right.
you know, they're in on Edwin Diaz. They're pretty much in on every single reliever, I think.
Of course.
I don't. If I were to guess right now, I probably should update. I don't think Scott's going to be the closer there next year. But yeah, there's, you know, of all these guys that are free agents with closer experience, I mean, the guys that could really supplant someone like Scott, you know, there's probably, you know, top of my head, five or six. So if unless they get one of those, you know, maybe Scott does get a chance to, you know, get that role back again next year, but it's not going to be Sasaki. And I'm kind of glad that we can stop talking about this for now. Cause it's, I just, the Dodgers can do better. They know they can do better. They're going to spend money still. It's, yeah, Sasaki will be either. I wouldn't be surprised if he's in AAA even just, I mean, is that, it's not that crazy. He's still young. He's still, you know, they need to develop him as a starter. That's what it is.
It sounds like that's what's coming from the front office. Pobo Andrew Friedman said, I think for us using Sasaki as a reliever was about trying to get his delivery back. I feel like we've made a lot of progress on that. So for us, We're definitely viewing him as a starter and a really good one, and we'll continue to work this offseason and put him in the best position to be ready in spring training to help us win again. So unfortunately, the Dodgers might have another weapon in that rotation to pair with all the other guys they got there. Let's move over to the AL East, where we've got some teams that could make a big changes to their bullpens. As you know, everybody's always looking to upgrade their bullpens, but the Red Sox, Orioles, and Blue Jays are all in the mix for a closer. The Red Sox want a super pen and could add a closer that could take over the role in 2027. Obviously, they've got Aroldis Chapman on contract for next year. And once he's a free agent again, I think they're hoping that the option will be in-house and maybe somebody that they acquire this year.
Yeah. It sounds like that's not their first goal. Their first goal is to, you know, either bring back Bregman or bring in like someone like Alonso. Then they want to add a second starter, but then like that third secondary goal they have is to add a really good arm to the back end of the bullpen. I don't even know, is it really a super pen if you add like one guy to Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman? It's just like, that's like,
I mean, not compared to what we've seen from the Padres, like the Yankees.
The Yankees, the Padres, even the Rays. Yeah. It's like all these teams already have super pens, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, it does make sense, you know, if they were to sign someone to a more of a multi-year deal, which I, again, in this free agent market, I don't know, of the younger guys, maybe like a Devin Williams or Pete Fairbanks, Ryan Helsley. They've shown interest in Helsley in the past, so that could be the fit there. But yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, yeah, I would like, I mean, those three things I just mentioned, you know, at least one, you know, big right-handed bat, a number two starter, and then another reliever you can trust in the seventh, eighth inning. Yeah, those are definitely on the top of my list. So yeah, I think between all these AL East teams, and I'm sure the Yankees are also interested in some degree on relievers as well. You know, I don't know, you know, if they'll all end up happy at the end of the free agency, because again, there's only like 8-9 like real closer types. So I feel like someone's gonna get miss out, and I don't know if the trade market. I mean, I haven't heard a ton of names in the trade market for as far as closers go, really. Right. So it's, if you miss out on the free agents, it might be tough to kind of, unless you get really creative, might be tough to upgrade your bullpen.
That's right. Well, the Orioles will also be looking to upgrade their bullpen via spending money by adding closer experience, which could mean that the recently acquired Andrew Kittredge is out of a closer role. Right now, he's the top option in that bullpen, but it's a very thin group there in Baltimore. So really, they could bring in almost anybody and they would surpass Kittredge. I wouldn't be surprised if they like brought back Sir Anthony Dominguez or something. But even then, I wouldn't count Kittredge out of that role. So they really have to get one of the top five or six guys if they want to knock Kittredge out of that role, like without a question. So there may still be some competition there.
I think the quote was close to something like, we want to close a guy, a veteran with closer experience. So they're going to bring back Craig Kimbrell or, you know, they were in a Raisel Iglesias.
Get Kenley Jansen.
As maybe Kenley Jansen. I mean, does he really want to go to Baltimore for a year? Maybe.
I guess you maybe feel more comfortable about it if you have like enough setup guys to offset that.
Yeah, true. I don't know. Jansen could, if they were in on Iglesias, then Jansen could be a pivot for them. It's going to cost them less, and you get your closer for a year. I do think, you know, counting on Batista to come back next year and be healthy and be your closer is probably not smart as well. So, yeah, I would imagine they'd be more interested in finding, you know, three or four. I mean, I don't know if anyone gets a 4-year deal outside of Edwin Diaz in this reliever market, but you know, a 3-year deal with someone maybe, maybe Devin Williams. Fairbanks even stays in the division. I feel like one of those guys could work out for them long term, but. Yeah, the Orioles say that they want to spend money this offseason. We'll see. I mean, they've already added Taylor Ward, which costs them a little bit more. than what Grayson Rodriguez was. So they're starting to add money. Let's see if they actually make that big splash that they're talking about, at least for now.
And continuing the conversation in Toronto about Jeff Hoffman's role for 2026, we talked about it last week and the possibility of him not being used as the closer, but the Blue Jays are apparently looking to add a closer so that Hoffman can be used in a role similar to how he was used in Philadelphia as more of a high leverage reliever. I think that is a better role for Hoffman, but I think the Blue Jays will be hard pressed to find a pitcher better than Jeff Hoffman. I mean, he struggled in the closer role, but I don't think that's because of the role. I think he just got unlucky in the home run department, had a really inflated ERA, but all the skills are still there. I think he's a very strong reliever, one of the best in baseball. So if they sort of try to shoehorn in some closer to use Hoffman more flexibly, maybe that works, but I don't know. It seems like they're trying too hard to get back the old Jeff Hoffman rather than creating a new one.
Yeah, I think that, and this bullpen's already pretty deep, especially when you consider Jimmy Garcia coming back as well. Yeah. I mean, they lose Sir Anthony Dominguez, but you got Garcia coming back. The bullpen was really good last year for the most part. And if you take away Hoffman's insane home run luck or bad luck, it really does make things look a lot better. I know you can't just take it away. It happened. Right. But the hope is that bad luck is not as bad luck-y next year. So I would be okay with Hoffman as the closer there. But it does seem like they are pretty dead set on adding someone. They were in on Iglesias. I think they've been talking about Devin Williams. I think Ryan Helsley. Maybe they bring back Sir Anthony Dominguez. But like those three guys, Devin Williams probably I would give a closer role to over Hoffman. But like Helsley over Hoffman, I don't know. I think maybe just if you want to say Helsley's better in the closer role, where Hoffman's better in a setup role. But like talent wise, I don't think there's much of a upgrade or anything. I mean, it helps your bullpen overall. But does it make your closer situation better? I guess by default it does, but Hoffman's still pretty talented. And if he was in this free agent class, he'd still be like a top five or six option for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the AL East, but there's lots of rumblings of some shakeups over there. Before we move forward to talk about the injuries and transactions from the past week, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We're going to talk about some injuries from the past week, or at least some injury updates, starting with Robert Stevenson, who does not need surgery, and he'll be ready to go for the start of spring training and elsewhere in Los Angeles. Ben Joyce is doing well, but it's still too early to make projections on how he'll bounce back. So, I mean, that's pretty good news, I guess. I mean, not like the greatest thing. I mean, Stevenson is coming off a lot of injuries, so good news that he doesn't need surgery, but it's not like, oh, Stevenson's in the best shape of his life. I saw Ben Joyce is in the best shape of his life a few weeks ago. Yeah. So we'll see how that works. But those are the top two arms in the Angels bullpen. And if both of those guys are healthy, they could really be some sneaky late round picks for fantasy.
Yeah. I think it sounds like Stevenson at least will be ready for spring training. Ben Joyce might be a little bit further behind. So I guess if you're throwing a dart on someone in this bullpen at the end of a draft, Stevenson maybe is the guy right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. There's so much upside with both of them. There's so much, risk. So that's why, if you're in a really deep draft, if you can take both and just see how like that happens now, just take both and see how things play out maybe. But then there's Zephyr John. Detmers could always stay in the bullpen, be a factor. They could go sign a guy. They could bring back Jansen. A lot of options there. Sounds like it didn't sound like the Angels were talking about, what they're looking to add. I know they were trying to add a center fielder now. I don't know if they said anything about a closer or a reliever. But yeah, I don't know. Stevenson still is kind of intriguing for me if he's healthy. He obviously did, 3 innings last year, but at least one outing he looked really good in. So like there's still, I think there's still something there. There's still that glimmer of hope that he can get back what he had in Tampa Bay that, you know, that half a year. But yeah, it's, you know, worth a dart throw for now, but I wouldn't get too excited. Right. You know, as things stand today.
All right. And our last bit of injury news, Braves reliever Joe Jimenez underwent a cleanup surgery on his left knee. Pobo Alex Anthopoulos was the one to report that to the media. He framed the surgery as a cleanup, and that doesn't really sound especially alarming, but the timeline for his return isn't clear. Anthopoulos said the team won't know how long he'll miss until later this year, pretty much the end of 2025 at the earliest. And that does raise questions about his availability for spring training and the start of the season. And regardless of, you know, the results of that, it's going to be a tough blow for a bullpen that is already lacking in right-handed options. So if Jimenez is delayed at all, it's the next man up is literally like Grant Holmes, which I like Grant Holmes as a starter, but I mean, that's not your best option.
What's the nickname for him?
The real estate broker.
Oh, the real estate. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Not ideal. I mean, not ideal.
Yeah. That's why I don't know why they were like, you know, Tyler Kinley's not worth $4.75 million, I guess.
Well, they're really going to need to go out and get some more guys.
Yeah, it looks like that bullpen probably could use at least one or two more arms. It's this Jimenez. I mean, he missed all of last year with the knee. Now he's got another surgery. You can't
be counting on him at all.
The knee Braves, is clearly, yeah. The Braves Sperry, typically, Josh Sperry had told us this in Arizona, and I was like, what? I thought he was going to be back for next year. But yeah, right. It doesn't sound...
Not good.
Sound too great. So
the Braves typically act really early in the offseason. Yes. We've already seen that with a few moves thus far. So maybe we'll get resolution on how they're going to address that bullpen over the next few weeks. But yeah, it sounds like maybe they'll push harder in January if news comes out on Jimenez's return timeline. That's less than ideal.
Yeah, that's clearly something's not right with that knee, keeping him out this long. So, yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I loved how Joe Jimenez kind of, you know, the second half of his career, he kind of took off. So, yeah, they definitely need him as a setup guy there, or they need to go out and get somebody else.
Yep. Yeah, because who knows how good he's going to be. He hasn't really pitched in a while.
Yeah, it's tough to rely on him. And then you're stuck with Dylan Lee, and hopefully Iglesias can put together one more good season, and then the rest of the bullpen's a lot of question marks. Yeah.
All right, let's get into some transactions. We had a few notable relievers designated for assignment removed from their team's 40-man roster. They'll go through the waiver process, and any team can claim them and add them to their 40-man roster. And if they're not selected or claimed by another team, they'll either head to the minors for their respective team or become a free agent, depending on a number of factors, but let's look at some of them. Nick Sandlin was not designated for assignment. He was outrighted by the Blue Jays and will be a free agent. Not spectacular, but certainly a name that has had success in the past. Jorge Alcala was designated for assignment by the Cardinals. Taylor Saucedo by the Mariners. Any opinions on those three? Any way you see those guys factoring into holds in the bullpen?
I mean, Alcala has always shown some upside, but it's just the consistency has never been there for more than a month at a time. So still an interesting arm for someone who still throws upper 90s. Sure, he'll gain interest, but he's out of options. He's out of arbitration years. Yeah, I don't know if he'll find a major league role.
The Pirates DFA'd both Colin Holderman and Dory Moretta, and the Red Sox DFA'd swingman Josh Winkowski. I think all three of those guys have a path to factoring into a contender's bullpen or really anybody's bullpen.
Winkowski.
I mean, he's, I guess I haven't really dove into him before. He was probably somebody who I liked because he pitched in like a bulk relief role, and that sort of makes him valuable in some fantasy circles. But Moretta, I was going to say, is probably the one who's the most notable. I mean, he did miss some time with injuries and didn't look as electric when he returned, but there's still a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I was surprised a little bit that the Pirates let him go just like that. I don't know. Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, he's healthy now for a full season. I think he still has another option year, so, or maybe he doesn't. I don't know. That could have been part of the factor here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's still, I mean, he wasn't the same maybe when he came back late in the year, but he still had some solid results. And I mean, another year removed from Tommy John, I feel like he could have been in for a big 2026. So yeah, and he's a name to keep an eye on to see where he ends up. Because yeah, there's always been really fun stuff, with him. His stuff is different for sure. But he always had pretty good strikeout numbers. So yeah, if he lands in the right bullpen, he could definitely be in the holds mix.
That's Dory Moretta, and the last trio of DFAs we'll discuss all came from the Tigers. The Tigers DFA'd Jason Foley, Tanner Rainey, and Alex Lang. Foley was the closer for the Tigers at one point. Tanner Rainey was the closer in waiting for the Nationals back in the day. And Alex Lang was also the closer for the Tigers a few years ago. He cleared waivers, was released by the Tigers, and then caught on with the Royals. So he signed a major league deal with Kansas City. I'm pretty sure. I didn't see that it was a minor league deal. I mean, it's not, that was like news from an hour ago. So we'll see how that comes about. But I mean, that's certainly a good addition to a Royals bullpen that isn't awful, but is not spectacular. They need strikeout stuff. That's always what they've lacked. And that's one thing Lang brings to the table, even though he's got almost no control.
Yeah, it does sound like it was a major league deal, $900K, can bump up to $1 million in performance bonuses. So yeah, nice. That's a good that's a good get for the Royals. I feel like, you know, we've talked about how we're not sure on Estevez being able to repeat this year,
and Urseg could become a starter.
Urseg could become a starter, and he wasn't even that great in the relief role last year. The rest of that bullpen, there's some talented guys there, like Bolin and Steven Cruz. But I mean, Lang, and you know, we talked about Lang when he got called up. He pitched in one game, and the Tigers sent him back down. But he looked pretty good in that game. Like, the stuff was still there from when he was where he was at pre-injury. And the story with Lang has always been strikeouts are high. Walk rates are also high. But yeah, Kansas City is a really good spot. I mean, we've seen what they've done with, you know, Carlos Estevez and other relievers in the past. So yeah, sneaky, nice move there. I want to, you know, see what his role is, but he could easily slide into I like him better than John Schreiber as of right now. I don't know if the Royals do, but, it's kind of like replacing Hunter Harvey, where like, right, this guy has an upside, total wild card. But that's kind of like where Lang fits in with Harvey being a free agent, I feel. It definitely intrigues me, that landing spot. And Jason Foley, I know he hasn't pitched in a while, and it's not like we were super high on him before, but you know, guys who throw sinkers at 97, 98 don't grow on trees. So if he's healthy, he's another one to just keep an eye on. I don't think he's going to be closing games out anytime soon anywhere, but can still be an effective bullpen arm for the right team.
Mm-hmm. And with Lang, I don't think it's that crazy to say there is a path to him becoming a closer for the Royals just because of the movement going on there, the uncertainty with Estevez's future performance, and the lack of enticing options outside of there. So I would not say I wouldn't be surprised if Lang became the closer, but I wouldn't be as surprised as I would if like Jason Foley became a closer somewhere.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because Lang has that swing and miss stuff. He's got three legit pitches, and if his fastball's working, his knuckle curves, changeup's pretty good too. So yeah, there's definitely a path for Lang, and in Kansas City, that could be one of the better signings of the offseason if he's healthy.
All right. Speaking of signings, we had a trio of relievers sign free agent contracts over the past week. We'll start with a couple of Southpaw swingmen. Ryan Yarbrough re-signed with the Yankees for 1 year and $2.5 million. The deal includes $250,000 in performance bonuses. Yarbrough likely won't be a fantasy relevant guy, especially in if you're looking for saves or holds, but in those leagues where bulk relievers, guys who pitch multiple innings but don't use a start, Yarbrough has always been valuable in that role. Like going back to his days with the Rays, that was what he always did, and he was pretty decent with the Yankees, and there was a period of time where he looked like a different Ryan Yarbrough, and he was actually pitching really well, and I was streaming him in some leagues. So I don't expect him to be excellent, but cool to see Yarbrough back with a Yankees club that helped him find another level last year.
Yeah, I wonder it kind of – I hope it doesn't bump Brent Hedrick off the roster. But
well, maybe he can latch on with a team we want to root for.
That's true. Maybe that would be fine by my standards. But yeah, I guess Yarbrough is, he's a good guy to stream if he's following someone in a good matchup. But yeah, someone no more than a streamer, never going to be a big holds guy in the spot where he's at.
In San Diego, the Padres brought back Kyle Hart via a one-year, $1 million deal. The deal includes a $2 million club option for 2027 with a $200,000 buyout. The $2 million club option could increase in value $250,000 for each of 16 and 20 games started, and another $500,000 at 24, 28, and 32 starts. And on top of that, the buyout price, the $200,000 buyout, could increase $100,000 at each of 50, 55, and 60 appearances. So a incentive-laden contract for a pretty inconsequential arm. But Hart was very good in, I'm pretty sure, the KBO for a little bit. So maybe there's some potential there. It sounds like most of the potential resides in him being in that rotation. So we'll see what his role looks like. He's probably going to be a swing man in the same fashion as Ryan Yarbrough, but it's not fully guaranteed that Hart is a starter, and we could see him pitch out of the bullpen a lot for the Padres, though. With the plethora of options there in San Diego, I don't expect him to be somebody we talk about much next year.
Yeah, I guess depending, they have a couple options there as far as starter, who's going to start, who's going to relieve. He's just another guy kind of who can do a little bit of both. But yeah, probably settles into a very similar role to Ryan Yarbrough. But yeah, I don't think he's going to have too much fantasy implications unless he does get a starting role and, takes a step forward from where he was at last year.
All right. And lastly, the big one that we've sort of hinted at with a lot of the way we've been talking thus far, Raisel Iglesias re-signed with the Atlanta Braves for 1 year, $16 million. Looks like a lot of teams were interested, including the Dodgers, Blue Jays, and Orioles. But as expected, considering Iglesias was not dealt at last year's trade deadline, despite being a very obvious trade candidate, he will return to the team that he called home the past few years. And Raisel Iglesias is one of the best pitchers in the second half, year in and year out. So fade him in the first half and buy back in for the second half, because he always finds a way to pitch really well.
Yeah, it's 2 years in a row now. He's been a second half machine. Yeah, it does sound like the Braves' decision to not trade him at the deadline paid off for them right with this, because there were other offers, but he did appreciate that they held on to him throughout the whole season last year, so he doesn't have to move anywhere. Yeah, we'll see. You know, like we talked about, they're gonna need to add a reliever or two, but I don't think it's gonna be anyone that supplants Iglesias as the closer there. So yeah, he's pretty safe again. But yeah, like we just mentioned, the first half last year was definitely it was terrible, and then he really turned things around in the second half. So it probably gives him a bit of a discount going into drafts this year. We'll see. I don't really trust any ADP like this early in the year, but he should at least be a safe, top 10, 12, at least 15 closer off the board. The upside isn't what it used to be for Iglesias, but he still can be a solid closer for a Braves team that, let's be honest, that Braves team is going to be a lot better this year, unless they have all the same injuries. But they should be a lot better this year, with everyone healthy.
It is crazy how much money he got. I mean, Raisel Iglesias is really good. Yeah. But $60 million makes him like the third highest paid relief pitcher in baseball, which is pretty crazy. I mean, he's not the number three reliever in baseball, but 1 year, you're right. That's still pretty rich. The Braves really need him. So it makes sense that they would cough up maybe a few million extra dollars to ensure he returns. But man, that is pricey. And if that's indicative of the relief pitcher market this year, we could see some big numbers being bandied about amongst the free agent relievers.
Think maybe the Dodgers got that price up to $16 million perhaps. I think again, just like they could have had Tyler Kinley for four. I know it's Tyler Kinley, but like still, like there was that feels like it could be a bargain, that like, you know, 4.75 million for a guy like Kinley. I would still rather Iglesias for $16 million, just the track record, but you know. And then the Braves have the money to spend, so let's be honest, they can afford this. But yeah, it's makes me think Devin Williams is going to get something similar, or you know, he gets something long term that's close to that. Even guys like Helsley probably get a pretty lucrative deal despite having, you know, the season he had. So it should get the ball rolling. And I'm hoping, you know, once we're done recording this, I'm sure the next, we don't record for another 2 weeks. I'm sure there will be some more moves there. Big moves, I think, in the reliever market.
All right. Let's discuss some of the trades from the past week. Nothing substantial, but there were some interesting names shifted around. The Rays and Red Sox, and I guess a little bit of the White Sox, they all had their hands in this pile of trades. Let's start with the trade that sent Yoenndris Gomez and Steven Wilson from the White Sox to the Rays in exchange for Everson Pereira and Tanner Murray. I think there's some intrigue with Gomez, and Steven Wilson has had some success in the past. I don't think that means he's a great reliever, but the fact that the Rays are in on these guys always makes you start thinking, like, what do they see?
Yeah. Especially Gomez. I know, I think Nick's big on him as a potential like fifth starter there, possibly. I mean, Steven Wilson, there's been times where we've been interested in him. I mean, the White Sox didn't exactly help his value. But yeah, it's the Rays, like you said, it's the Rays. Maybe they see something where they can get the most out of Wilson here. Gomez, if he does end up in the bullpen too, yeah, that's definitely an interesting arm, especially with the Rays at the helm, you know, whatever they want to do there. I did kind of like Eric Orsi a little bit. I'm surprised that they moved on from him.
Yeah, Rays traded Eric Ors to the Twins in exchange for Jacob Kisting. I don't know if it's Ors or Orsi. I
don't either. Should know that.
Yeah. No.
But I mean, that's also another name, because like Minnesota, like who's their closer? They have such a wide open bullpen right now. And he's someone who, you know, maybe finds his way into the closer role if they don't make any big splashes in the reliever market, which doesn't sound like they are. They haven't exactly been linked to anyone. So right now it's Cole Sands and Justin Topa. And then I think Orz is right there. Like, right. I mean, him and Pearson Ohl are right behind those two guys. It's just such a,
what a group.
It's just, yeah, it's not a bullpen to chase. But if someone does make some,
oh, it is Orzy. Sorry.
It is Orzy.
Yeah.
Eric Orzy. I still like Cole Sands, I guess, the most here, but Orzy is definitely, you know, right there behind him. Now, I don't trust Topa. I really don't want Topa to be the closer. He might be, just because of the veteranness he brings, which would be a shame. But, you know, Sands and Orzy at least have something to kind of be excited about. So, yeah, that's where my hopes are for this bullpen in Minnesota.
All right. And then the Red Sox traded three fringy relievers, sending Brennan Bernardino to the Rockies in exchange for Braden Ward, Chris Murphy to the White Sox in exchange for Ronnie Hernandez, and Luis Guerrero to the Rays in exchange for Tristan Gray.
Yeah, I mean, Bernardino to Colorado, that's tough. I feel bad for him, but like he might have a chance at a roster spot there. They do have more interesting lefties. They have some young lefties in that system that I would rather the Rockies, you know, throw out there and pitch and get innings. But I guess they want Bernardino for his veteranness. I don't know.
Word of the day.
He's an up down lefty, you know, 34 years old, I think. Murphy's probably going to be like we talked about Ryan Yarbrough and Kyle Hart. Murphy kind of fits into that role, like lefty who can kind of start if you need him to, bulk innings. He was pretty good with the Red Sox last year when he came back. He missed time with Tommy after having Tommy John. I don't know if there's too much upside there, but Luis Guerrero, especially him heading to Tampa Bay, really, I really hate that one as a Red Sox fan. I don't know. I mean, I think he still has two option years left. He's still, you know, very talented. He's still young. Needs to, you know, shore up his command. But the stuff there is definitely back end reliever stuff. And who else than Tampa Bay to, you know, harness that ability? So, that's the one that really annoys me out of these three Red Sox trades. Just, you know, because Guerrero has the most upside of that trio, and the landing spot in Tampa Bay is just like, it's going to come back to bite him. He's going to be shutting him down for the next 4 or 5 years.
Dang. Well, that will cover all of the transactions from the past week. Let's touch quickly on these awards as we're going to go a little bit long in this one.
Yeah.
Let's go and talk about reliever of the year. I don't think there was much surprise here in the American League, especially Aroldis Chapman earned the American League Reliever of the Year award. And in the National League, where maybe there was a little bit more competition and, you know, we didn't know how much saves totals would factor in, but Edwin Diaz earned the National League Reliever of the Year award. Any opinions on those, or is that pretty much exactly how you expected it to go?
Yeah, that's how it should have been. That makes sense. No objections from me on that.
All right. And then in terms of all MLB selections, pretty similar here, but a little curious. The first team all MLB selections for relievers, we had Aroldis Chapman and Yoan Duran. And on the second team, Edwin Diaz and Andrés Muñoz. I think that collection is fine. It was weird to see Duran make the first team over Muñoz. I would have had him over Muñoz. So interesting, but you know, I don't think I'm gonna have any arguments over these either way, but certainly interesting to see how that shook out.
I think I'm guessing Diaz was second team because he had 20, he was under 30 saves, right? I'm guessing that factored in. But yeah, then if it's saves taking into account, then Duran over Muñoz is kind of interesting. Right. But yeah, I mean, they're all four of them had really good years. So
sure. No, yeah. Mason Miller is a bit curious.
Yeah, I get saves probably, you know.
Yeah.
They want to see, but they didn't put Carlos Estevez on there, so I'll give
or him Robert props. Suarez.
Yeah, I'll give him props for that, I guess.
All right. Well, that will wrap up our awards talk. Next, we'll head into our main topic and discuss the free agent relievers for 2026. But first, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are now heading into the main topic, just 53 minutes into the podcast. And we will attempt to draft some relief pitchers, or the free agent relievers. We'll pick 7 each so that we can build a bullpen. I think we'll go the first person, the second person will get 2 back-to-back picks, and then we'll switch off back and forth just to even things out. Let me flip a coin on Google. Flip a coin. All right. Let it flip and then I'll flip it again. All right. Call it.
I'm going to go tails.
It is tails. All right. Yes. You want to go first or second?
I want to go second. I'll give you what he is.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. I guess that makes sense. So let's start this off. I mean, the rules are pretty apparent. We're drafting the available relievers on the market right now. That takes out Raisel Iglesias, which would have been a great pick, probably one of the top few picks in this draft. But I think the obvious pick, no matter what, even if we had all of the relievers in baseball. I think this guy might go number one overall, but that's Edwin Diaz. He has been one of the best relievers in baseball throughout his career. He sort of flip-flops back and forth, having successful seasons, and he's had some freak injuries in the past. But man, when he is right, he is pretty hard to be topped, pretty tough to hit. So I will take Edwin Diaz with the first overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's been one of the more consistent guys in the closer realm over the past few years. I think he's pretty safe no matter where he lands. He's one of the only guys here where I'm not too worried about landing spot. You know, the saves were down, but a 2.18 Sierra, 38% K rate last year. So yeah, he's definitely the best choice on the board. I'm going to go with Devin Williams with my next pick for number two. Few bad weeks last year for sure, definitely hampered his whole season, but in the second half he was really good. 2.29 Sierra, 39.3% K rate, 18.3% swing strike rate. Should get a closer role next year. There's enough teams that want him to be their closer. It sounds like the Red Sox would be interesting. I don't know if he would close there, but the Reds, Dodgers, Marlins are in the mix. Mets, Tigers, Giants as well. The Marlins in that mix kind of feel like that meme with like the clown and the soldiers trying to like go and, you know, freak, you know what I'm talking about? I don't think the Marlins are really in the mix there, but apparently they have some interest. But yeah, outside of the Red Sox, he's closing for pretty much all those teams there. I think the Giants make a lot of sense. I've been saying that for a while. Blue Jays could definitely get in there as well. But yeah, I'm going to say Devin Williams. And then after that, it really does get a little, I kind of wish I had the first pick, 'cause now I don't know. I thought there was going to be like two slam dunk
picks. The first pick, he gave it away.
I know. And now I thought there was like who's the third reliever off the board here?
Once you make your pick, I'll tell you whether or not that's who I would have picked.
I want to go. Man, so many question marks here. I just gotta make a pick.
Yep.
I'll do it because this is who I have. But I'll go with Phil Maton.
All right.
You know, he's a little bit on the older side. He's probably not going to get more than 1 or 2 years. I mean, maybe he gets a 3-year deal because he was so good last year. 32.3% K rate, 34.8% CSW. Probably not a closer, but he fits in nicely as a setup guy for pretty much any team out there. And there was some talk about him. He wanted to sign early in the offseason. I haven't heard anything since then. But yeah, just, you know, not a closer, but definitely a really good reliever out there. Who outside of like the first half of 2024, I mean, he's been really good for a while now.
All right. I don't think that's the way I would have gone, but I mean, Phil Maton has been very underrated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just the age and like the fastball concerns me to a degree. But it's so funky. It's so different. He's such a different, different pitcher that I think I think he'll be fine wherever he lands. As long as it's not a super unfriendly pitcher park. As long as it's not Cincinnati, New York, you know.
Yeah, I think he's going to be good. Not sure he's going to be closing anywhere, but that doesn't mean he won't be a good pick in this draft. I don't know how we're evaluating who wins. Is
we're not. No one wins
via draft.
Yeah,
somebody's going to win.
We'll
win one way or another.
We'll keep this team together. We'll put it into a league and see who has the best season.
There we go.
Year.
All right, perfect. Okay, so with my second pick, I think I'm going to go with Robert Suarez. He opted out of his option. It's not really that I think he's far better than some of the names around him. It's just the fact that I think he's going to be closing. He feels like a guy who, I don't know, like part of his personality, part of his identity resides in being the quote unquote closer. And I don't know him at all, but he does have 76 saves over the past two seasons. And I say that because I think he's probably going to be prioritizing closing over maybe more money or maybe being on a competitive team. So for me, if we're talking purely fantasy right now, Suarez is somebody that I'd be targeting over the rest of the relievers out there because he has so much experience in that role and has had some success or a lot of success there. He's not been somebody who I look at and say, oh, that's super sustainable, especially because we had the whole, like, I don't throw my changeup anymore. And then I throw my changeup again He doesn't have huge strikeout numbers, but he has pitched well. He's going to be 35 this next year, though, so he's not going to get a lengthy contract, but I wouldn't be surprised if he latches on with the team for 1 or 2 years, maybe like a Carlos Estevez size contract and be a closer. Mm. But I sort of like him more so because he is somebody that I expect to get saves next year.
Yeah, it does kind of depend on fit for me with him. I mean, he was obviously great last year with the changeup coming back. 2.98 Sierra, 21.9% K minus walk. I think it comes down to, you know, I think if Baltimore was in on Iglesias, I feel like Suarez was always kind of like the backup to Iglesias, or kind of in the same realm as Iglesias as a potential 1 to 2 year, you know, veteran stopgap. So I think Suarez in Baltimore, that's a really good fit. I think that could work out. AL East is tougher, but that, I mean, Baltimore's ballpark still pitcher friendly for the most part there. So, I that was the guy I was really thinking. If I was going to go with a closer, I would have probably gone with him next.
Yeah.
I definitely get that pick, but there is definitely a drop off after the Diaz and Devin Williams upside.
Mm-hmm. You're up next.
Oh, we're just going back and forth now. Okay.
It makes sense because if I get the first pick and then back-to-back pick sort of equal that, and then we go back and forth.
Gotcha. I don't know what to do anymore.
That was quick.
I know. I'm a little bit more down on him. I'm gonna go with it's Pete Fairbanks, I guess. We're gonna bring it back. Okay. Because I'll add another closer, or I'll add someone with closer closer innings to his name, to the mix. Wasn't great in the first, he was mediocre in the first half, wasn't terrible, but definitely finished strong in the second half and stayed healthy. 2.56 Sierra and 27% K minus walk rate over the second half. That's kind of where Fairbanks, you know, in his prime or his best years, that's where Fairbanks was. That's closer. So the second half was much closer to his best years than we've seen in a while from him. He was healthy, closer experience. He's a guy where we talk about fit. It's going to come down to where he lands and like being able to pitch in April and possibly October in cold. It can't be, you know, with the Raynauds. He's got to be somewhere warm or in a dome. The first month could be rough for him if he's trying to pitch in Boston in April. That wouldn't work. So, if he lands, and he should be able to get, again, there's enough closer openings where he should be able to find a closer role somewhere in a good situation for him. Like, I don't know. I know Texas isn't looking to spend money, but like they do need a closer, and he makes a ton of sense to go back there. But I like Fairbanks given, again, same with Suarez, where it's like wherever, it just depends on the landing spot, really.
Right. Okay, well, I think I am going to continue getting some guys with experience in the closer role that are maybe a little bit older, but I feel more secure in what they're going to do next year. And I don't think I would have made this pick over the past few years, but based on my rankings, I'm going to go with Emilio Pagan. He had a great year last year, and you know, you could probably consider it maybe the best year of his career, sort of in competition with 2019, where he was actually, that was a way better year, but he was very good in 2025 as well. 30% strikeout rate. I may be putting too much weight on the feel that he has on his splitter. That is a very volatile pitch, famously across the board, not just for Pagan, but for everybody. And that wasn't a pitch that he threw back in 2019. And if you sort of look at the past few years, it's a pitch that did not have good PLV marks. He wasn't able to consistently throw it for strikes. But this past year, that's what he was able to do, get a lot of strikes on it, take the pressure off his cutter and his fastball. But I think just the fact that he thrived, like not only survived, but thrived in Cincinnati, a place where I said, hey, he's going to go there and he's just going to, I mean, he's the epitome of a home run machine. He gives up so many fly balls. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't get absolutely destroyed there says something. I know he did have a 200 BABIP and he's not going to be as good as he was this past year, but there are so few relievers on the market that have that strikeout upside that Pagan has, as well as the closer experience. So not only would I not be surprised if Pagan has success next year, but maybe he latches on with a team that's out of contention or you know, a lower, smaller market team as a closer. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to like the A's or something and is their closer there. Wouldn't be great in that ballpark.
No, terrible.
But hey, that's what we said about Cincinnati. So maybe Pagan does well wherever he ends up next year.
I was thinking like Washington, maybe. They wanted to be like a little bit of a, like a little aggressive. A better Kyle Finnegan, if you will. Younger, or he's not younger anymore.
He's older.
I think Pagan, again, comes down to fit and hopefully a ballpark that's not going to play into his home run tendencies, his fly ball tendencies. But yeah, he'll definitely have, I give him probably like, I think a 50-50 ish chance to end up closing games where he lands. Definitely coming off a really good season. So I get that one. Coming back to me, I still don't really love, there's some guys here with some question marks. I think I'll go with, and I've kind of soured on him over the past month, but I'm still intrigued at Brad Keller. Just how electric he was in the second half last year, 35.4% K rate over the second half. Went on a really long run without allowing a run in that second half. I don't think he's going to close. I mean, he could get closer interest again, like we talked about, similar to Pagan, maybe, where, you know, the teams like the A's or the Nationals maybe are interested in someone like him as a closer, or at the very least, he should latch on somewhere as a, you know, setup man. He's still only 30. Last year was his first year in a full time relief role, where obviously he was able to showcase more velocity. I think he was up to like 98, pretty much up 4 miles per hour from where he was as a starter or tweener. I think Brad Keller should be pretty safe as a really good reliever next year. As long as they have velocity sticks, and he should definitely be a setup man somewhere.
I agree. That's a great pick. I really like what Keller brings to the table, and it feels like he's probably got some of the highest upside among the relievers on the free agent market.
He's
right
the youngest one of this group. Exactly. I mean, he's still 30. Yeah.
He reached another level last year, and it's like, if he can take that, if he can get like even close to that this next year, it's like he's going to be pretty incredible. Even if he's not a closer, I think he's going to be a really good setup man. Let's move forward. I have taken three guys thus far, and I sort of want to go away from what my rankings say, so that maybe that takes away from my rankings, but I feel like I'm going to stick with them, and I'm going to take Kenley Jansen. And that one, I don't think he's the most talented reliever available amongst the guys that we haven't drafted yet. But if I'm going to put any money on these guys for closing, it's going to be Kenley Jansen. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Jansen is just somebody who has closed throughout his career. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to move into third on the all-time saves leaderboard this season. I expect him to latch on with some team. And to be honest, like even at 38, he's not been bad recently. It's not like teams are like ruining their competitiveness by bringing him on and letting him close. And it's just, you know, they're just trotting a Hall of Famer out there to like get ticket sales or something. It's like Jansen is still effective. He's not overwhelming. He's not going to be an all-star anytime soon, but he is still effective especially in that closer role. I think he's going to become a closer, if not just for the first half, and then maybe call it quits. We'll see how things go. But I think no matter what, wherever he signs, he's going to guarantee that he's getting saves.
Yeah, I mean, 24 saves away from 500. I hope he gets there. That'll be fun. Like we talked about, there's still a lot of those teams that are probably looking for a stopgap closer, a 1 year closer. He shouldn't have a hard time finding a closer role. Again, it might be the A's or, you know, someone not great, but he'll get a chance to get saves next year. So yeah, as far as saves go, he hasn't been, I think just because of his age and, like, you know, pitching for the Angels last year, it's like, you know, we kind of forgot about him being, he was still very solid. You know, the strikeout rate's not what it used to be, but he's not destroying your ratios and he's picking up saves. So yeah, right. Still very usable, functionable, relief asset there. Kenley Jansen. All right. I'll throw a dart here. Ryan Helsley, hoping he can bounce back after a tough 2026, really just a tough, I mean, he wasn't the same guy all year long. When he got to New York, when he got to the Mets at the second half, he was really, really struggled. There was some pitch tipping going on there. But the pure stuff still is there. It hasn't disappeared. You know, still had a solid swinging strike rate, 15.6%, and a 127 stuff plus, which is, you know, top 10 amongst relievers last year. So the stuff's still there. He's only 31. He's for the most part been pretty healthy lately, the last couple of years, which has been good to see. And yeah, he should get a chance to close if he wants it. He might find a better deal, better situation setting up somewhere, but there will definitely be teams in need of a closer that will be interested in his services. And I think Ryan Helsley, I think he's definitely got a chance to bounce back in the right situation next year. So, you know, he's one of the guys on this list I'm most interested in seeing just where he lands, because it could be really bad, could be really good. But yeah, if we'll have to wait and see. But Helsley still intrigued me even after a rough 2025.
He sort of makes sense for the Orioles, in my opinion, where I would put him in the closer role over Kittredge and just sort of let him work that out. And if it doesn't work out, you still got Kittredge. But that was definitely the logical next pick on my rankings. But also, I think in general, Helsley is amongst the guys who were closers last season or didn't end the season as the closer. I would expect Helsley to be top of the list for a potential closer next year. He was a closer for the Cardinals, moved to the Mets, struggled immensely, and I really think it's going to be different next year.
Yeah, that's something I don't know. I mean, a lot of these closers, these closer types, they have that, you know, that mindset where, like, it's very different pitching in the ninth in a save situation and instead of pitching in the seventh or eighth in a, you know, a tie game. It's very different for them. So yeah, I wonder if that does make him more interested in a closer role, no matter where it is, instead of, you know, being a setup guy in a better market or better situation. So yeah, hopefully we get to see him closing out games again next year, getting back to where he was in 2024.
All right. I'm going to stick with another old guy, or I guess that's probably mean to some people. I'm going to take Kyle Finnegan. He's only 34, so not that old. It's weird that I can't believe I'd say this, but, Kyle, you know, sort of intrigued in what Kyle Finnegan can do next year. He was very good for the Tigers last year, which is not something we've talked about. We haven't really spoken positively about Finnegan during his time with the Nationals, but it looked like just a change of scenery really helped him reach another level. And the fact that it was so obvious what the change was, because it's always weird when a guy goes to another team and you're like, what changed? Like, is this something that's actually sustainable? But the fact that you can just look at his pitch mix and say, oh, he just started throwing his splitter just all the time, and that's what led him to another level that we had not seen from him, really speaks to the sustainability of that in the future. And, like, no matter where he lands, it's like that whoever gets him is going to say, okay, do whatever you were doing in Detroit, and that's going to be throwing a lot of splitters. He's somebody, it's hard to say, like, I want to rely on that splitter, but he's somebody that has thrown a splitter for a long time, and that pitch has always been good for him. So I expect him to maybe not be at the level he was at with the Tigers, but still be better and maybe somebody that you can trust more than he was during his time with the Nationals. And there's some upside. There's some closer experience there. Maybe he goes back to the Nationals and, you know, takes what he learned with Detroit. Yeah. So I do have a little bit of faith in Finnegan being interesting.
Yeah, I really will hope he's, I think he's, it's best for him and the team if he just stays in Detroit. I think that really worked out.
Yeah.
Him and Vess co-closing, I think, works for them too. Yeah, just dominant in the second half in Detroit, 2.33 xFIP, 31.8% K rate over the second half there. And we talked about splitters being volatile. That's my only concern there. His splitter has been pretty solid for him. It's never been I think the fastball playing off the splitter is definitely the way to go for him. The splitter is not a huge strikeout pitch like it is for other guys like a Fernando Cruz or whatnot, but it pairs well with his fastball enough where, yeah, I don't understand how it took this long for him to just figure out that he needs to throw the splitter more than throwing his fastball, whatever it was, 70% in Washington, whatever it was. But yeah, I think, yeah, like you said, he's unlocked something. He should be safe wherever he goes. Those changes should go with him. But Detroit just seems like a good fit for Finnegan. He's from there. I think that's where he should stay. But that did open the door. You did open the door for me to take another shot on a guy who had a down 2025. It wasn't even that bad, but I think no. Luke Weaver could, you know, he was dealing with injuries last year, never got the closer role, really. I mean, there was a lot of changes when Stephen Williams lost the job there, and then Weaver kind of had the role and then got like hurt, and then it was never really the same, I guess, in the second half. Wasn't someone they could trust in the postseason as well. But, you know, maybe, you know, I think he's shown enough over the past 2 years to get himself a multi-year deal. Maybe not as a closer, but still a really good reliever, setup man, a fireman, if you will. I do think that's probably where he's best suited. But yeah, even in the down year last year in 2025, still had a close to 20% K minus walk rate. Still only 32. I like him to bounce back next year. Probably not a closer, but he should be a very good reliever wherever he is. That's Luke Weaver. I don't know. What do you think about Luke Weaver? Why have you been passing on him?
No, that's I had him in my top 40, and I don't think you had him in your top 40.
That's
and,
right. You did have him higher than me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like Luke Weaver bouncing back. I think he's somebody that has the upside to potentially close for a team. And if not, like if last year was the floor, I'm super in on Weaver because last year was very solid for somebody having a down year. I don't know if he's going to get back to the first half of 2024 when he was super electric for the Yankees. But he's definitely a different pitcher than he was when he was a starter. The swinging strike rate is still there. He was at 16% last year, which suggests a guy that can strike out more than 30% of the batters he faces. So I think he's somebody with a lot of upside, and the role will really decide how fantasy relevant he is. But I think either way, he's going to be somebody that I think teams will be sort of clamoring to get their hands on once all the top names are off the board.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. I think this next one is the most underrated option out there, and I'm taking Tyler Rogers. He is the submarining righty who pitched mostly for the Giants throughout his career, but pitched in the second half for the Mets this past season. He has always just been so good. I mean, throughout his career, 2.76 ERA across 424 innings pitched. Doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but he doesn't walk anybody. And the durability that he provides, I think, is really what is going to get teams excited. I don't think he's going to make a ton of money, but for somebody that you can basically like pencil in or even Sharpie in for 70 plus innings pitched or more than 70 appearances, I mean, you don't see that often, but because he throws like 83 miles an hour, he's not going to get injured at all. And you can pretty much just throw him out there every day. And you don't really have that because there's so few relievers that aren't going out there throwing max effort all the time. And because Rogers finds success by being funky and throwing with just the most extreme arm angle in baseball, I think it allows him to continue to find success. He is going to be 35 next year, so probably no more than a 2-year deal, but I'm sort of excited. I don't know why he couldn't pitch forever with the
I was going to say, I don't think age for him matters too much. No. I think honestly, he's the type of guy. I think like the injuries to kind of watch out for someone like him is when he gets older, is just like back injuries because of, you know, like that, sure. that delivery and like
knuckle scabs maybe.
Yeah. I think, yeah, he's someone who, I think more and more about, like, I don't understand why teams, I do see why teams are like afraid of him being their closer, but
sure.
I mean, he doesn't strike people out. He's not your typical closer, but he's available to pitch. I mean, pretty much 7 days a week. He's for the most part been healthy. And I mean, he's been super effective against lefties and righties. I think he might not be the sexiest choice as a closer, but like there's something there to him just being available and being solid that,
yeah,
you know, you take him over a lot of some of those volatile guys who you don't know if they're going to strike out three or walk three. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. well, you could just have Tyler Rogers just be solid and get you through the ninth inning unscathed. There's be interesting to see what his market looks like. I wonder, I mean, the Mets are going to need to add a lot to their bullpen, and I wonder if they would just throw him some more money. The Giants could always bring him back too. I think that's also got to be in play. But yeah, I like Tyler Rogers a lot. Even despite the bat missing potential not being there, I still am, you know, find myself being a Tyler Rogers fan. So we have two guys left on our little board here, top 14 board. We're not including lefties. Lefties are in the next segment. So
because none of them are really that great. Lefties
aren't very great. But I'm going to go with another wild card here. Sir Anthony Dominguez. Just there's still upside there. The postseason was like it's kind of rough watching, especially in the World Series. That home run he let, what game was it that he allowed that home run to Otani? It's 5-6 or 6 maybe. It was like, ooh, so.
You almost said it. I think it was game 5. No,
it was game six. It was in Toronto.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
And like, I called that, like, I'm like, they're bringing him in the seventh inning and this like pressure. I mean, I didn't, Hoffman obviously had his own issues, but like, I thought Hoffman would have made sense to come in there. Like, I just didn't trust Sir Anthony Dominguez at all in that series.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if the Blue Jays even did. I think it was just like their best option at some point. They just kind of had to turn to him. But he's still only 31. He's come back from, you know, some injuries, and he looked really good stuff wise last year. The stuff's there. I mean, big strikeout numbers, 30% plus K rate, 114 stuff plus. I don't know if him, I don't think I would trust him as a full time closer. But if you're for a bad team, maybe he gets a chance to close. Or for a good team, he should at least have a chance to set up again. So be a setup guy somewhere, get some holds. But yeah, there's still intrigue with Dominguez. But yeah, there's definitely some downside here of his command, and just the volatility he does show.
All right. I looked at the rest of the options to see if maybe I want to stray from your top 14, but I don't think that's going to be the case. So I'm just going to stick with Sean Armstrong, who was very underrated last year for the Rangers, so much so, 2.31 ERA, 0.81 whip was the third best amongst relievers. So he really had a good season. It's not as sustainable as the whip to ERA would suggest, because I mean, remember when pitching analysis used to just be, well, like how good, like look at this guy's whip versus his ERA. I used to feel like I was smart when I was 15 and doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But regardless, he still had a 3.94 xFIP. He was a guy who struck out some batters, nearly had a 20% strikeout minus walk ratio. Very lucky with his BABIP and his home run to fly ball ratio. So we're going to see a step back next year. But he's got such a deep arsenal that, you know, maybe he's best suited in a multi-inning role. And maybe that's what the bullpen I'm building is missing. But he does seem like, it does feel like when a guy has a deeper arsenal that if none of those pitches are really standout pitches, the combination of them is greater than any single one of them. So that's
changed last year for him. Yeah, that arsenal did expand a little bit last year. Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that can be something that allows Armstrong to continue that success. I think the addition of that sweeper was really big for him. And if you're looking just at like PLV to determine, you know, what's his best pitch, it's that sweeper. And the fact that it was one that he added last year and it helped him have one of the best seasons of his career, pretty much in competition with 2023 when he was electric for the Rays, points to sustained success, in my opinion. And I think the fact that we've seen him have success in the past also suggests that, hey, this is a guy that you shouldn't count out as being solid at the very least next year. I don't expect him to be a closer, but I didn't expect him to be a closer last year. And he recorded nine saves for the Rangers, who were not a terrible team. So you never really know with a guy like this, but Sean Armstrong will be my seventh and final pick.
Yeah, I mean, and if the Rangers really are not looking to spend any money, maybe that's the guy they bring back fairly cheap to kind of close games or split the role of Robert Garcia next year. I mean, there's a chance that would be a good landing spot for him for sure, because we know we had success there. But yeah, he did change his arsenal last year, so he was a different guy. So that does tie into his little mini breakout last season. I don't know if he was a driveline guy or a tread guy, but I've seen him on one of those on, you know, social media, you know, working with those guys to change his arsenal around. So yeah, I think Armstrong is a very safe option for next year. But yeah, probably not a closer. But I don't know, he did have nine saves, so maybe a team gives him a chance there. And he's a veteran, he's 35, so maybe he does get a chance somewhere. But
that was
really
the theme of my team was veterans. I think the youngest guy I took was like 34. Let's recap these teams really quick. You took Devin Williams, Phil Maton, Brad Keller, Pete Fairbanks, Ryan Helsley, Luke Weaver, and Sir Anthony Dominguez. And I took Edwin Diaz, Robert Suarez, Emilio Pagan, Kyle Finnegan, Tyler Rogers, Kenley Jansen, and Sean Armstrong. I don't think reading those names makes me feel a certain way about either of those teams. I think it's they're pretty even. So they are a collection of relievers. It will be interesting to see how this works out, because there's plenty of guys. I think if we're looking at this from a higher level view, there's plenty of guys that have closer experience, will be closers. There's obviously some all-stars, past all-stars and future all-stars on this club or in this grouping of pitchers. And there's also some guys that, you know, are looking to build off breakouts or bounce back from down seasons, and should be interesting to see where they land, because that could have it always does have a big impact, especially on relief pitchers, their fantasy value. So we'll be bringing in the news to you all off season about where these guys sign and what we think of them. So stay tuned to that, but we're not done here. We still have some left-handed relief pitchers to talk about, some bounce back candidates and some old guys to touch on. So let's start with those southpaws. Gregory Soto appears to be the top left-handed option amongst free agent relievers. He was a closer back in the day for the Tigers, but has sort of fallen off a little bit, but I still think he's somebody that's going to be targeted by teams just because of the lack of options.
Yeah, I mean, we can go through all the names and just, I mean, there's not really, you know, Soto's the one guy here with like some upside. I think maybe you can put Sean Newcomb into that kind of category with him. Cause Newcomb did have a little bit of a mini breakout in the second half as a full-time reliever with the A's.
Yes.
And they're both, you know, if anyone in this lefty group is going to be a closer next year, I think it's Soto first and then probably Newcomb second. Because then after that, it's like Caleb Thielbar, Justin Wilson, Drew Pomeranz.
Those guys all feel like the same guy, just like 39, old guys that have gone in and out of pitching, but still are good.
39, 38, and 37 years old, respectively. And they're all really good last year, really, really good seasons last year. But you're only, I mean, I can't see as good as they were last year. I don't see them getting more than a one-year deal. But for those teams who just want to add a really good lefty, a really good veteran lefty, who gets lefties out, Thielbar, Justin Wilson, Drew Pomeranz are your options there. And then after those three, plus Soto and Newcomb, it kind of just falls off the map a little bit here. I mean, Steven Matz was okay as a lefty transferring into the bullpen for the first year for him, like full-time being a reliever. But again, Matz is up there at 30. I mean, it's just a bunch of old guys again. It's Danny Couliam, Steven Matz, Hobie Milner, Andrew Chafin all 35, 36. A lot of question marks there. Caleb Ferguson, still only 29 somehow. Feels like he's been around forever.
He has been around forever.
Yeah.
That's why it feels like that. I mean, he started pitching when he was like 19 or something.
Yeah.
21.
Yeah, that's right, because he came up as a starter at the Dodgers.
Well, he started three games, so sort of.
Sort of a starter, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's all these guys are in the same boat. They're all guys that are going to be on teams that are going to pitch a decent amount of innings and probably be various levels of successful. But like, I'm not mad at any of these options. Like if my favorite team signed one of these guys, I'd be like, oh, this is great. These are very useful guys. I mean, Newcomb and Soto, as you mentioned, are guys with some upside. And then those three old guys are sort of just there, but Ferguson has been reliable for like his whole career.
As a secondary lefty, I'm fine with
definitely.
It. As my go-to lefty.
There's nobody here that I want as my go-to lefty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coulomb has been great late in his career. Steven Matz has found, some success, Yeah, he's been generally reliable as a reliever. Milner is sort of in that same boat as well. And Chafin is maybe he'll pitch forever. Yeah. It always seems like a southpaw like this that, you know, has found a modicum of success throughout their career is always going to get a job as long as they're on the market.
Yeah, I think the key here is the lack of left-handed relief pitching depth or like, upside pitching depth here. I think we talked about it before the show a little bit how this is why like Jose Alvarado was option was picked up by the Phillies. And this is, there's just not a lot of depth here and the Phillies are looking to move maybe one of those lefties and they could probably get a really good, they could get a good return because, you know, outside of Gregory, Soto is maybe the only one that gets a multi-year deal here. And I'm not even so sure he gets a multi-year deal. So there's just, a lot of 1 year deals here. And then, so if you have an extra lefty in your bullpen, the trademark, I mean, the Astros should be all over that. They can deal from the Okert, King, Souza, trio that they have. So I think, teams with lefties in their bullpen, if they have extra, they should look to move them and capitalize because, this free agent group of lefties is. And I don't think it was great last year, too. I think this is something we've been saying like the last couple of years.
Teams just know not to let go of their southpaws.
Yeah, I mean, like Josh Hader was a free agent 2 years ago, but that was like the one. But he's also a closer, so it's like these just really good lefty relievers are like, they don't come on trees, they don't grow on trees, and like teams like the Phillies, like they lock up Alvarado or Matt Strom to longer term deals because they see this coming,
right. This next grouping of relievers, are they ready to bounce back or are they just completely cooked? These are all right-handers that had varying levels of success last year. Tyler Kinley was on the Rockies and then made it to the Braves and was really good, but then the Braves still didn't think he was worth just $4.75 million. So we'll see where he ends up. Pierce Johnson sort of in the same boat, pitching for Atlanta, was pretty solid. They didn't want to pay him $6.75 million. So he'll hit free agency. Jordan Romano has had back-to-back years where he's just been unrosterable, but there's still plenty of there. So I wouldn't be a competitive team or maybe an uncompetitive team signs him to be deep in their bullpen. There's a possibility he's closing at some point next year. Michael Kopech is somebody that maybe has the most upside amongst all these guys. It's just about him staying healthy and returning to form. And Hunter Harvey has always been there in that same boat. A few other names that are around, but I don't have a lot of faith in: Scott Barlow, Jonathan Loaisiga, Jose Leclerc, and Ryan Stanek.
Yeah, I mean, there's intrigue in kind of everyone here. At some point, they were either a closer or showed closer type stuff. I think, between Kopech and Harvey, those are the two guys I'm interested in. I put the ex-Braves guys in there because like I thought they were good enough last year to get paid what they were getting paid, but maybe the Braves saw something that we didn't, and they think that they're cooked. They're both 35 years old. I don't know. I feel like Kinley's second half was really good. So I think both could be a steal in the right situation. Kopech and Harvey, though, are the two. Like if they're healthy, again, big risk there with them being healthy. But I mean, Kopech 2 years ago was looking like the Dodgers closer for a year and a half, potentially. And then he got hurt. We'll see where he's at. He's only 30 years old. Hunter Harvey's only 31, but obviously the health issues of Harvey are a concern. But I think prior to the past to this past season, he had been relatively healthy for the 3 years up to that. And some, you know, maybe not a 60, 70 inning guy, but you can probably count on 50 innings from him. Can we next year? I don't know. But yeah, I think Romano is a tough one because he's starting to get, he's 33, and there was that glimmer of hope in May where he was like really dominant and then the wheels fell off. I don't know. Again, maybe like a team that wants to bring him in for a year and see what happens. I mean, it definitely makes sense to take a shot on him still, but yeah, I don't have too much hope left in him at this point.
All right, now our last grouping of relievers. You mark these as AARP. Which,
these guys are like my age. I feel like
good play on words though.
Yes,
because it does have the RP for
it
relief
does,
pitchers in
right.
there. I just
got Alex Anthopoulos RPs. So these guys are all going to be Braves. No,
right. I just now got that. I understood the joke about them being old, but now I just get the RP part now that I've said it. But yeah, I mean, these guys are, a lot of these guys will end up on teams and some of them in roles where they are really helpful for their clubs. Chris Martin, one of them who's always been really good, but he's in his late 30s. David Robertson, always, he's going to be 40 this year. All right.
David Robertson is going to be 41.
Okay. These are some old dudes. Kirby Yates is still around. He was not great for the Dodgers last year, but can still strike out some guys. Paul Sewald, Craig Kimbrell are still kicking. And then some guys who may just be cooked at this point, Liam Hendricks, Ryan Pressly, Ryan Brazier, Tommy Canley, and Luis Garcia. They're all still around. And I wouldn't be surprised if any of these guys sign with a club. But I mean, guys like Chris Martin, David Robertson, and Kirby Yates are almost definitely going to be contributing in some capacity for a club if they want to keep pitching.
If they want to keep, yeah, I know. I mean, we saw Robertson not show up, and I mean, when did he first pitch? In August or July?
Yes, very late in the season.
So does he do that again? Is he just done? I mean, he wasn't great, but he and Martin both, the way that their arsenals, the way that they pitch, I mean, they're 40, 41 years old, but they can still get outs at this level. Especially Martin, if he still wants to pitch, I think he's definitely got an opportunity to pitch somewhere next year. Yates too. I know it was really bad. This 2025 wasn't even on the postseason roster for the Dodgers, but still missed bats at a crazy high rate. So there's still that. The splitter's still there. Still a weapon. So yeah, if he wanted to pitch, I'm sure he would get an opportunity. And same with, you know, Sewald didn't get to pitch much last year, but I still think he gets an opportunity. Craig Kimbrell is the wild card for me here because I thought he was cooked, and then he didn't look that terrible for the Astros down the stretch. No. So there might still be something there. It seems like he still wants to pitch. You know, just the fact that he came back last year when he could have called it quits after what happened in Atlanta. I mean, he could have just been like, all right, I'm done. So yeah, if Kimbrell wants to keep going, definitely there still seems to be a little gas left in the tank there. Velocity is not what it used to be, but he was able to make it work last year. Maybe he's, you know, he's been able to throw his curveball for strikes more and kind of change his you know, how he pitches, how he attacks hitters. But yeah, I think, you know, Martin's clearly the guy here. And yeah, if Sewald's healthy, I wouldn't count him out of being effective next year in some sort of role, right, with Yates and Kimbrell kind of being wild cards.
All right. Well, we did it. We made it through all of the free agent relievers. And
it's not even all of them, but yeah,
we'll talk about all of them, though. Whoever gets signed, whichever, anybody that's marked as an RP on FanGraphs, said they're going to be on here. And if talking about Kyle Hart and Ryan Yarbrough wasn't an indicator of that, I don't know what was. But we have got you covered here on In the Pen every other week. Tune in live on Thursday nights. We will be discussing relief pitchers throughout the offseason with various topics, but definitely we'll be focusing on the free agent contract. So tune in when you can live, or just listen in the recorded podcast that posts every Friday morning, or not every Friday, every other Friday through the off season. But like I said, we've got you covered. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and anything else you're working on through the end of the year?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. Starting to work towards, you know, putting out a full save plus holds list and an updated closer list for our draft guide. That should be out sometime. I don't know if it's January or February, but that's going to be the bulk of my work for the foreseeable future. Another thing, just the thing that we didn't talk about that I meant to bring up is that, the Rule 5 draft that's coming up, and there were some guys that were left unprotected. Okay. I think Reggie Crawford, they did not protect Reggie Crawford, the Giants.
Buster.
I know, that's a very fun lefty. Some team is definitely going to take a chance on, I would imagine, in the early rounds of the draft that could be a factor. He didn't
pitch last year.
He didn't. There's definitely risk. There's definitely concern. He had
labrum surgery. Okay.
Yeah. The upside there is too fun, though, I think, for teams to pass up. So
yeah.
And dang, we're talking about lefties being in short supply. That's definitely right. A lefty who has Jose Alvarado-esque stuff. Gregory Soto, just like high velocity, great slider too. So mm-hmm. Yeah, fun guy to look out for in the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about those selections once those come through. There's still plenty of stuff that's going to happen. I mean, there's going to be non-tenders as well that could add that's
tomorrow.
To
the
free agent market.
We missed it by a day. And last year, there were some crazy ones, too. I mean, Romano was a surprise one last year. There was someone else, too, I feel like, maybe Finnegan last year was kind of a surprise as well. And then he ended up re-signing. So, yeah.
All right.
We'll keep an eye out for that tomorrow.
We will. All right. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. I am going to be working on stuff, still trying to figure out what my off season looks like. Been a very hectic off season for a lot of people in the world. So it's been a crazy couple of weeks for me and I think for a lot of other people. So I'm hoping to re-ramp up the First Pitch podcast to talk about some starters and free agent contracts. And I'll be continuing work over at Baseball HQ doing playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. So stay tuned to all of my work. Like I said, you can find it over at crumplerbaseball.com. But that will do it for this episode 142 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all in a couple of weeks.